Salt Morning Show on KHC Productions. If you enjoy this episode, please leave a like and comment.
Hello, this is the Grand Salt Morning Show with Jordan,
Jared,
Kale.
He's joining us by Google Hangouts again. But we don't have Kaylin this week. She's in full con mode making her costume for MomoCon?
Yes.
MomoCon. So today we're going to be talking about Deadpool 2, talk about the Billboard Music Awards, film festivals here in Georgia and around the world because there's candies going on, and just anything else we can think of. So, and we were going to talk about the Batman Ninja. We still may, but that was kind of Kaylin's topic. But we may still touch on it because, by God, that was a thing.
It was a thing.
So, Kale, why don't you go ahead and start us off talking about your experience at the Georgia Film Festival that you went to this weekend?
I only went in the afternoons on Saturday and Sunday to see the stunt panel, which was always great, which is always great because they always like to perform nice stunts, or they like to show clips of like their demo reel kind of cut together of, you know, action scenes, and they like to have fun. And then we saw the UNG short block number 2. And all the shorts were in, but the one that really stood out was Halfway. Now, Halfway won the jury award for best film, for best UNG short film. So, it was a great film.
Was that Alyssa Coleman's?
What?
Was that
Alyssa? No, it wasn't. Alyssa Coleman did win an award for staving off intention or something. I can't remember. I'm sorry, Alyssa. Sorry. But she did. Her movie did win an award, and then Gary Ivey won for A Fistful of Fangs.
Oh my!
You didn't see what?
Yeah, I did some of the costumings. The cowboy hats and the ponchos and stuff were all mine.
Oh, nice. It was, I got to see you class and it was really good. Sophia Halfway, I'll look up the full name in just a second, but Sophia's movie Halfway was brilliant. It's all in one shot where they just go around up and down or side by side a room with a girl who's basically clinging on to life in basically a purgatory.
Gotcha.
Purgatory like state. And some of the other standouts were Tyler Brown's movie. I'm sorry if I'm blinking on the titles, but Tyler Brown did a movie that was basically an experimental short of a couple, like they were being mugged and ultimately shot. It's like the very first scene of Batman v Superman. The director of Halfway, by the way, going back to that, is Sophia Estelle Kamak, I think. I'm sorry, Sophia, if I butchered it, but her movie was the one that won. And and then I had a movie that was playing in that short block too. It was Death of A, and apparently people really liked it. And I'm not saying that just to boost myself. I'm saying people did come up to me and say they really liked it. And then a lot of stuff was really good. But it got better. It got really great at the end. And that's what I'll say about the UNG student block.
Were you able to watch the trailer for Dead Winter, which is a film that me and Jared?
Yes.
Yeah. What?
Yes. It looks great. Oh my God. It's fantastic. It's an intense trailer. I think it's either coming out today or it's probably coming. It's going to be out by the time this podcast comes out, but it's fantastic. It's wonderful.
It'll be out nowish.
Yes. Yes. But the other films we got to see were Shifting Gears from the director of Dead Winter, Jason Wynn. That was a, you know, family movie, you know, of, you know, family, father, son, car bonding, racetrack movie, with a great cast of character actors. And it was solid. It was fine. It's fine. It's fine. I'm not the big family picture person, for how much it cost. And also for the amount of time they had to film it. It's really well done. And then the other movie that played in front of, or played with the Dead Winter promo trailer, still was very well done. It's a beautifully shot movie. Kind of like, spoilers, it's kind of like Tuck Everlasting, but the dark and gritty version of it. If you guys remember that movie.
No.
But yeah, actually, no.
Years is that Jason McKenzie wrote the coverage for that 8 years ago.
Really?
Which is hilarious because two part-time professors at UNG actually shared a connection 8 years ago and they don't even know.
Really? Interesting. It's like, so some of the things we were going to hit on past this was the festivals. I was unable to go, although Kate was able to go to the entire event because she hosted it. She was doing a lot of the AV tech for it. And she said a lot of the shows were really well done. A lot of the movies were really good.
They were.
There was a lot of people there from what I heard. And I hopefully will be able to go next year. I know me and Jared are trying to go to the Terminus Film Festival. Mm-hmm. That'll be later next month. And if we do, we'll try to get some coverage. I'll try to get some GoPro footage and behind-the-scenes stuff if I can. But I'm excited for Dead Winter to come out. And we worked really hard on that, and I'm excited to see where it goes. I'm the assistant editor on that production, and we currently don't have a editor yet, but there is talks of it being possibly edited by alumni and or by Moonshine Post-Production in Atlanta. So we'll see where that comes out. Why don't we go ahead and move on to Deadpool 2? I figure that will take up a big chunk. We're actually going to have an interview with one of the filmmakers at the end of this that I'll be tacking on so you can hear. I did this earlier in the year, and we'll be listening to an interview with Ethel and her crew from one of the short films. I don't know if it was at the festival, but they've been working hard on it, The Piece. And so we'll talk about that. Was that shown at the festival?
I don't think so. I don't think so, but then again, it might have been shown on Friday.
Well, that will be added at the end of this episode. Next week, we'll actually have an interview with Jared. That will be adding on to the end of the episode, and after that, we'll have a filmmaker, John Michael, on the next episode of that. All right. So, let's talk about Deadpool 2. What was your initial thoughts, Kale?
It's really funny, but like it really is. Like, there are inside jokes throughout the wazoo. I mean, you really have to see this movie two or three times to get even 50% of what's going on in the movie. And yeah. But with that said, I can't deny, I appreciated the simplicity of the first one, where it's really, because if you remember the first one, it's just a love story of him getting back to Vanessa, his girl.
Yeah,
that's the kind of simplicity of it. And Deadpool 2, it's like, it's, I said this on Twitter last night, or maybe this morning, but I think Deadpool 2 is kind of like what Batman Returns was for the Batman franchise back in 1992. And I say that because Deadpool 2, it's very convoluted and it's very complex, and there's a lot going on in a less than 2 hour plot of the movie. And this is this, you know, the non-spoilerly list. You got Deadpool getting over a loss. You have, you know, him building X-Force. You have him You have Cable and everything that's going on with him, and you have the introduction to Domino. You're still continuing the banter of Colossus and Negasonic Teenage Warhead, and then you have, I don't think this is a spoiler, but Negasonic Teenage Warhead also has, she's in a relationship in this movie. I mean, there's just, and then you have the antagonist of the movie and everything that's going on in the, with, you know, that character. And it's a lot going on in one movie. And I think the film just kind of loses sight in that when it's decided to set to have a very serious arc of the film, because while I appreciate them trying to have a serious arc and trying to give Deadpool something to grow as a character, I think a lot of it got lost when we got to the third act, because the movie really had me until right when the third act started, and then things started kind of just not coming together the way it should have. And then the ending, I felt like, got drawn out too much. And then the end credit scene, while extremely funny, it is a ball busting laughing, it's a ball buster of a joke, it also has problems because it kind of, you know, makes the whole movie pointless.
Yeah.
So
I'm gonna cut you off there just so we don't go into too much spoilers.
All right.
Give my review of it.
Yeah, this is my non-spoiler review.
So I think with the film, I think it was really well done. I laughed a good bit in it. I actually had spit take at one point. For those of you who have seen it, it's the Basic Instinct scene. Those of you who haven't, you'll understand when you get there. I just think there's so many references to the Marvel movies, to the DC movies, to Deadpool itself. And there's just so many that you can't catch all of them. And I had to go back and rewatch the original one to even get it. There's one reference that this won't spoil anything for you guys. In the first movie, he references that there's a thing of cocaine and the cure for blindness in the woman's apartment. And then later he has two balls of cocaine and does cure for blindness on it. And it's like, if you didn't watch the first movie, you would not catch that shit. There's a lot of stuff like that where it's like they took every little thing he said from the first script and they go, let's make sure we remember this. And it's like, it's funny as hell. And they're very thorough. I give them that. They're quite thorough. I also feel like the action in this movie was portrayed better. If you remember the first beginning action scenes, Kale, that they're more fluid than the first movie. The first movie, they're heavily CGI'd and they felt clunky. And the newer one, they all feel, he even makes a joke about it. It's like, that guy's really on fire. It's like they actually went through and did the effort of getting props and getting stunt doubles and getting all that done. So that way it felt more organic, because the first movie, that car crash that we saw over and over again and trailers and online articles and YouTube, it was so much CGI. It felt like we're playing a video game, you know? So I quite like the game.
Yeah.
Great characters. I would want to see a Deadpool 3 or an X-Force movie, if that's even possible. I also feel like every theorist on YouTube basically got it wrong. And I find that hilarious that Deadpool went 5 minutes in, took a left turn, and then they went on a pleasure cruise. So, Jared, you haven't seen the movie yet. You're going to see it soon. What are your expectations for this movie? What are some of your predictions? And what do you think? Because you haven't seen it yet.
My expectations for this movie are, like, I've been a big fan of Deadpool since I was young. It's because he's such a good, quirky character that kind of resonates with, like, the kid in everybody.
Yeah.
And he's just, and now the adult in everybody. I knew that they were not going to do the same thing that they did in the first movie, because that's just the nature of Deadpool, that you don't know what he's going to do. So it's kind of null and void for all these people to do theory videos, because if I'm expecting at least two fourth wall breaks, minimum.
Probably two, like, in the first, like, 30 seconds.
Fair. But when you say, like, they make, like, a sharp left turn within the first 5 minutes, everything makes sense. Like, that's not surprising to me. And that's something that I would expect. I would expect them to do a lot of things like the trailer itself. If you look at the two trailers between the first one and this and Deadpool 2, they kind of look like two different kinds of action movies. Like one of them looks more like this one looks a lot more Mission Impossible like, where like there's a lot more chasing, there's a lot more camera movement tracking. Whereas in the first one, it had the kind of what's his name? Oh my God, Jason Bourne. had more Jason Bourne cuts in it, where it looked like the action was a lot more supposed to be impactful. So I could even tell by just looking at those two that it was going to be two completely different movies.
Really, interesting. 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 So to answer your question, Jordan, there is X-Force movie coming out before Deadpool 3. And it's going to be written and directed by Drew Goddard, who did The Cabin in the Woods. And it's supposed to be coming out real soon. Real soon, right? Probably around 2020.
Interesting. So, I mean, the other part I want to talk about this movie is big, and they even make a joke about it in the movie about the first one, that it beat Passion of the Christ in R-rated domestic box office. This movie is getting pretty popular and pretty big, like the first one did. Do you think this is going to be set precedents, like we said last time, for more R-rated superhero movies? We had Logan,
please,
which was on the verge of being like, it's R-rated, right?
Yeah, Logan? It's R.
Yeah, but it was still
R.
But I think I want more like this, because like superheroes forever had a golden age, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, we had bronze, gold, silver, you know, also like that. And I feel like the beginning of Marvelous movies were in Batman, which is the gold age. Mm-hmm. Everything's PC, everything's lighthearted. The first Iron Man movie, like the most you got was a little bit of blood on his face whenever he fell, you know. It exploded a truck and you never saw a body, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they shoot people, there's no blood splatters. It was just people fall down. That was the golden age of superhero movies, where it was like, we're going to show people fighting, but no one's going to be like exploding and stuff. Then you got to the Silver Age, where you got to the new Batman v Superman, where there's like a little more grittier, a little darker. You had the Captain America Civil War and what's the second one? Winter Soldier. It was a little darker, a little grittier.
Yeah.
Yeah, show a little more action, bigger fight scenes. And I felt like that was Silver Age. We're getting a little grittier, a little darker. And then you get to the Bronze Age, where I feel like we're kind of at now, where, you know, in Infinity War, yeah, no, a lot of people's contracts probably ended there. You know what I mean? It was like, well, it didn't end, but you catch my drift, people that haven't seen it. If you have, you'd understand what I'm saying.
And it's been 2 weeks.
And then you have like Deadpool, which is heavily R, Logan R, and you have the Justice League movie, which was a laughing stock. That one doesn't even fit into this category. But you understand what I'm saying? Like, we moved from being very PC, aiming to be as comic book friendly as we can, to now where it's like we're making a film. Yes, the reference material is meant for kids, meant for teenagers, but like we're making a film. And let's be honest with ourselves, if someone gets shot, they're bleeding. They're not shot on the ground, coughing a little bit, and then die. And I feel like that realism gives more of a moral standing for heroes. Because if your hero shoots someone and they fall down dead, you're going, okay, the hero shot like a bad guy. But if the hero has to stab someone and they're looking them in the eye and there's blood there and they feel that remorse, you're like, this guy's a human. He's going to have fucking PTSD when he's done. And you feel a connection with a hero because you're having to go through that with them. It's traumatic, but you know that like he had to do this because he is a hero. He had to kill such villain, and that villain had such motives. He had a reason of doing a thing. Thanos, believe it or not, is a reasonable villain.
I loved Thanos throughout the entire movie. I'm like, yo, this man gets me.
But also
the protagonist.
Think about this, like the villains in Ragnarok, they have their own motives and they have their own drives and they switch sides and they do things. And then Black Panther, the villain in Black Panther, Killmonger, he's not wrong. He just doesn't.
He wins the moral argument.
Yeah, he wins the moral argument. And you go, well, you know what? And then what's the guy's name? The guy with the weird hand. Claw?
Oh, Claw. Ulysses, yeah. Claw.
I loved him as a villain. He was so nice. He was weird, quirky, evil. But at the same time, you look at him and you go, you know what? I'd have a beer with him. And it's like
fair.
The villains are becoming humanized.
See, another thing that we need more of is how, like, Killmonger actually influenced T'Challa. Yeah. He went to his father and said, you are wrong.
Yeah.
Like, he'd been raised to know one thing, and then he had a revelation. He changed as a person because of the villain. Not because he needed to save somebody, because he understood the villain's point of view.
It's called a character arc.
Exactly. And the first films didn't have that. At the beginning of Iron Man, what is he? He's a rich weapon dealer. At the end of Iron Man, what is he? A rich weapon dealer with weapons attached to him.
Well, I actually don't think that Tony Stark was the best person, because out of everybody, I think he has the greatest character development of any of the
Over
Marvel
time, superheroes. Yes. Over time. But in the first movie, he did. And Captain America, love him to death. He's a great character. But he goes from a plucky New York kid to a plucky New York kid that got Hulk Flex.
That's the correct one.
Skinny kid to kid with a bow flex that's still in the military. Either way, it's the same. Yeah. You look at Thor. The
fair.
Arrogant Asgardian.
But his
at the end of it, he's an arrogant Asgardian with a human girlfriend. Like the first ones, there's no character changes. They just introduce the characters. In the other movies, they did do a character arc. And Thor has now become one of my favorite Marvel hero in the cinematic universe because he's got so much depth to him, so much trauma. But like those first original movies, there was no change, you know? And like the Batman movies, the original trilogy, I love them to death. They're great. Well, not the original trilogy, you know what I'm saying? Like the Nolan ones.
Yeah.
They're great. They have a lot of things going for them. But it took three films for that character to change slightly, you know? So, I mean, at the end of the last one, he's like still
Batman.
Even though he retires, he's still Batman. And so it's like we need that character arc. And then Deadpool, as we were talking about it, he does change a little bit, you know? He goes from thinking all about himself and thinking about the person closest to him to thinking about other people as people and how to affect them and how to help them. Yes, it is a comedy action, you know, a weird movie, sci-fi. It's all different kind of genres, but he has a character arc. He actually changes in a weird way, but he changes, you know, and I think that's what we need in these movies is where heroes can be impacted by their villains and the villains can be impacted by the heroes and consequences exist, and they're not just like at the end of the day I'm just getting rid of one of my CEOs that took my tech, you know. It's now it's like if I don't do this people are going to die, you know? So I think
Jordan, I agree with you on Deadpool 2, but all the other Marvel cinematic movies, like the one that you just mentioned with the first Iron Man, I completely disagree. Because with Thor and Captain America, their arcs kind of grow, particularly Captain America, his character arc is over the trilogy of the Captain America trilogy. And then Thor changes at the end of the first movie because he learns wisdom. He learns, you know, wisdom and humility, which is something he didn't have before. And, I can say to your point also that applies to characters like Ant-Man and Doctor Strange. But then again, we don't have any, you know, overarching, you know, trilogy arc to kind of base off of what they're going to do. So
that's true. We're Ant-Man 2.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And maybe, you know, the character will grow more in Ant-Man 2, especially after the events that he was involved in with Civil War.
That's a good point. Jared just brought up a good point. So Ant-Man 2
is happening before Infinity Wars Part 2.
And also, timeline-wise, it's before Infinity War Part 1, right?
I don't know.
Think it's like right around the same time, like maybe like a day or two before, and then it probably ends like right when the events are happening.
Yeah. And then you have Ms. Marvel, which is taking place in the 90s.
Yes.
So they're like the thing I go way back, please. With the other Marvel movies, other than Captain America, every movie has been pretty much chronological, as in time frames. Of like this happens and then this happens and this happens, and some of them take place at the same time, but they don't interact with each other. Like, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy and Doctor Strange, those kind of like they bleed in a little bit, and like, you know, you can tell which time frame they're set in, but we haven't had any of their like, well, we've been watching this timeline, by the way, here we go back to the 80s, you know, mm-hmm. other than like, you know, a flashback in Black Panther. But didn't have any effect. You didn't see other heroes. So for them to go back to the 90s for Ms. Marvel and for this movie to be like, I know what you just saw is traumatic and probably gave you nightmares and you feel like you need to drink a little bourbon, but we're going to go back a few steps right before that happens so you can experience it all again. So that's what I'm thinking there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't we go to the Billboard Music Awards? We'll hit on this. And then if we have any other news, we'll talk about that or not, we'll end it and we'll go to the interview. So the Billboard Music Awards were last night for us. And we have our artists and winners, and we can discuss that. So the top artist, Ed Sheeran, won, beating out Kendrick Lamar, who's on a high since you talk about Black Panther. He was on the album for that. Also beat out Drake, Bruno Mars, and Taylor Swift. Which I noticed there, Ed Sheeran's the only one in that group that really produces something other than pop or rap.
And it's Ed Sheeran.
Yeah, it's also Ed Sheeran.
It's Ed freaking Sheeran.
What do you think of that, Kel?
Listen to a lot of music. I do listen to Ed Sheeran from time to time. He did the song for Desolation a while back.
Mm-hmm. He did.
So for new artist, Khaled one? Is that DJ Khaled?
Yeah. Also an artist that worked on Black Panther.
Oh yeah, he did work on that one. Billboard Chart Achievement Award went to someone that I don't know. And they beat out some other people I don't know, other than Sam Hunt and Ed Sheeran and Drake. See, Ed Sheeran won Top Male Artist, which he beat out pretty much the same people that he did before. So there's Post Malone was an option on that one. Taylor Swift won Female Artist, even though I don't know what the hell she's... What'd she come out with this year?
Look What She Made Me Do.
That came out this year?
That came out last year. Late last year.
Doesn't deserve the award for that.
Exactly.
Top Duo Group was Imagine Dragons.
Yeah.
Or Top Duo / Group.
Yay for Imagine Dragons.
I agree that Imagine Dragons is really good, but Chainsmokers was fire this year. They had multiple really good songs come out. And I don't understand what the hell U2 did to this year.
U2 released a new album, but...
Alright, whatever. Top Billboard 200 Artists, Drake won that, beating out Kendrick Lamar, Ed Sheeran, and Taylor Swift. So, Hot 100, Ed Sheeran won again. Top streaming songs. I don't understand how that's.
It's probably like number Spotify.
Gotcha.
Or like top Spotify artists.
Kendrick Lamar won that. Top song
sales. That's probably because of Black Panther.
Yeah. Ed Sheeran won again.
Perfect.
Top radio song. Perfect. Ed Sheeran won again. Top social artist, BTS, which is a Korean pop / rock / they're a little bit of everything. They're a really cool band. I suggest you listen to them. They're very fun to listen to. They got great dancing. Watch music videos. They put a lot of effort into them. They put tons of effort in Korean music videos. They're fun to listen to. They're cool to work out to. My sister loves the band. I'm glad that beat out Justin Bieber and Ariana Grande and Shawn Mendes and Demi Lovato, like, they deserve to get that spot.
Yeah, they're also, like, if you remember from New Year's Eve, they were the Korean band that came over, and that was, like, the big thing because that's the first time that's ever ever happened. So they're also groundbreaking.
They were on the Ellen show. They're on the Late Night show. They're growing a lot of popularity here in the United States. I definitely go recommend listening to them. They just came out with a new album. It's fire. It's great. It's so good. Even if you don't understand what they're saying, because they are Korean, they do speak some English.
Despacito was a hit song last year. Y'all can listen to this.
Yeah, if you can listen to Despacito, you can listen to this. It's really good. It has a lot of emotion. And a lot of places on YouTube will have the lyrics underneath. And so you can figure out what they're saying in English. Top touring, U2 won.
U2 will never stop touring.
No, it will not. R&B, Bruno Mars. I can agree with that.
Figured.
It'd be a weekend, though.
But it's Bruno Mars.
It's Bruno Mars. R&B is male, Bruno Mars.
Bruno Mars.
I don't even know who the female artist is. SZA.
Listen, it's the three contenders are Beyonce, Rihanna, and somebody who's not those two, so I'm glad they won.
Fair enough. Top R&B tour, Bruno Mars.
Bruno Mars.
Top rap artist, Kendrick Lamar, which I'm pretty sure just attributes to Black Panther. And he has come out with some other stuff, but like that whole album was fire. I also have no clue what Lil Uzi is.
He's a rap artist. He's okay.
If he's not a midget,
I understand the hype, but
if he's not a midget, I'm disappointed. Top rap male artist, Kendrick Lamar. Top female, Carrie B. I'm butchering Cardi names.
Whoever the hell.
Rap tour, Jay-Z. Has he come out with that thing recently? He's been doing so much stuff with his wife, it's hard to tell which one's actually making the songs. You know, but he is touring. I like some of his music. I don't know anything about the country artist or at all. I'm sorry. If you guys like country, good on you. I like good country, but I don't know what's going on in that whole world. So top rap, rock.
Imagine Dragons. This is kind of interesting to me because for the top rock artist this year, we have Imagine Dragons, Linkin Park, Portugal the Man, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and 21 Pilots.
And two of those have the dead lead singer.
You right.
So they couldn't get the awards.
We have Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers going up against Portugal the Man. We need to have a kind of new definition of like
rock.
Rock. Because I believe 2 years ago, Cold War Kids won.
Yeah.
And they're not rock.
They're like pop.
They're like pop alternative. A lot of these things are pop alternative, and they're just getting like thrown into these categories. And really, the only two I could see here, I can see Linkin Park as rock. I can see Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, of course.
But 21 Pilots is...
21 Pilots rap. Is not rock.
They're alternative rap something. But
they're 21 Pilots.
The only time I've seen a rock artist that won, and I'm like, yes, they are rock, was Jack White a few years ago where he won top rock album. Mm-hmm. That one was like, yeah, of course. Of course. He owns Third Man Records, a rock album. They also do comedy, and they also do folk, and they also do blues. But either way, he deserved that one. And like going on to Latin artists, that's now a category. I didn't know that was a category. I don't know anyone in it. Chainsmokers won top dance electronic artist. I can agree
that makes sense.
That makes sense. Christian artist. Kilda? Mercy Me? What?
Can't go.
There's gospel. Kendrick Lamar won top album for Damn. Period.
Damn.
I mean, it seems like the same people won over and over again. Top soundtrack, Moana won. And they beat they beat Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
They beat The Greatest Showman.
They beat The Greatest Showman and Black Panther. Fast and Furious was on that list, but I understand why they lost. But Moana? Like, listen, Disney, I know you got the game down on musicals. I know that is your bread and butter since the dawn of time. But they beat out...
I watched Moana and went, okay, this was nice. I watched The Greatest Showman once and bought the album.
Moana, I like Moana. It's a great story. But
it is. It feels, it's great.
It feels so copy and pasted from other Disney movies.
It's just, it's
Pocahontas.
It's not that impressive.
Don't get me wrong. I love the culture they showed. I like, the music was great. The Rock did a wonderful job in there, but it's not award winning. I don't feel like.
It's a great movie. It's just, it's a great movie, how did that make it in? That came out like almost 2 years ago.
No, it came out the beginning of this year, didn't it?
No, Moana came out in 2016.
Yeah.
No, it did not come out in 2016.
Yes, it did. Did the album just not come out till 2017?
Yeah, 2016. I guess.
How did that make it on the list?
That's a good point. How the hell did that get on the list?
How is it not on last year's list?
To be fair, we just talked about Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
That's true.
But I still don't agree with it.
Bruno Mars won top R&B album. Top rap album was Kendrick Lamar. Top rock album was Imagine Dragons. Basically, anyone that won the single like division won the album division, because that's kind of how that works. So what do you think overall of the awards? We'll wrap this up. What do you think of the winners?
Congrats to Ed Sheeran again. He's a great artist. He's always been a great artist. Most of his stuff is just completely beautiful. The man cares about his music. He has talent, and he knows that he has talent, and he doesn't force it. Does that make sense? He isn't trying to make an album to sell, because actually, if you look on iTunes, Shape of You, Galway Girl, and what's the other big one from that one? From The Divide. Perfect. All of them are actually cheaper than the rest of his songs. He goes the cheapest possible for those.
I think his ability to adapt to different styles of music helps a lot. Because Galway Girl and Perfect are like two different style songs.
Yeah.
So for rap artists, R&B, and everything like that, this is kind of what I figured. Bruno Mars is still at the top of his game. There hasn't been a whole lot of artists that have come out this year that, you know, I look at them and I go, yeah, that's great. You're up and coming. You're doing good. A lot of them have been really trash, especially in the rap and like, I guess if you call it rap, it's more like just making weird noises and repeating yourself. It just doesn't feel like there's an impactful community, because everybody's coming up on YouTube and coming up on SoundCloud. And it's like, that's not how we used to do it back in the days. And I feel like they're polluting the industry with just junk. What do you think, Kale?
Congrats to all the winners. I'm still wondering why didn't that make it in last year? I guess I should do some digging. And then, congrats to everyone. I guess I should listen to the Chainsmokers, because apparently they're really good. And yeah. That's my thoughts.
The only artist I feel like I forgot about, Childish Gambino, who's going to be our new solo. Oh, not solo, but he's going to be in the solo movie. He's mentioned a few times, but he didn't win any awards, which I feel like after really listening to him, I loved him on when he was on TV shows. He's a great actor, wonderful actor. And music-wise, he's got a lot of talent, but I feel like he's under the radar with everything he does. He gets in the spotlight, and everyone's like, oh, that's so great, and then he disappears. And it's like, he doesn't get that much respect that he needs. I know there's probably going to be a big talk about it if he came out with This Is America, but I feel like that's not so much a song, it's more of a message. Yeah, I don't think it's an award-worthy song.
And also the music video land, like the visuals in the music video land harder than the song itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is what I'm saying. It's a message, it's not so much a song.
I think if you heard the song by itself, you'd be like, oh, okay. It's cool.
It needs that music video. Whereas some of his other songs, like Sober, the song itself is beautiful, but adding that music video on there is just another layer. All right, well, we're going to wrap this up. If you're listening to the iTunes version, you will hear an interview after this I did with the crew for the piece. If you're watching us on YouTube or listening to us on YouTube, since we don't have video going today, we'll be wrapping it up. So thank you for listening. This has been Jordan.
And Jared.
And Kale.
And he's breaking out. Sorry, the audio for this week is still a little shaky. We're still trying to figure things out. We tried to go with the soundboard and microphone to fix things. Let us know in the comments how we can try to fix it or how to make it better. We're still trying to improve. And if you like this episode, leave a like and comment. We love hearing feedback. We'll even give you a shout out if you give us a good comment or a good rating on there. So once again, this is Jordan. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week.
Hello, and this is Jordan, and I'm joined here with
Katie, Ethel,
and Tyler.
And they're going to be talking about their film, and we're going to be interviewing them for the KHZ interview series. And we're going to start off, and we got a three-person one today. So we're going to be asking some questions. It's going to be a little bit longer than the other ones, but it's going to be interesting because we have two producers and a DP with us instead of a director. So we're going to get started. So what got all of you into film?
I'd say I got into film just by the fact that, you know, it was something that I grew up watching and I really loved and enjoyed. I didn't really understand the steps or process that you had to go to get into it. I just knew that I really liked it, and you know, fortunately I was able to embark on that journey here at UNG, so kind of been grasping it and going with it.
Well, I always wanted to be an actor when I was a kid, and then I did theater, and I got into film after I saw Psycho, and it was all history from there. I knew I wanted to make that. I wanted to be a part of it, so.
Yeah, same for me. When I was a child, I wanted to be an actor, and just noticing goofs in movies, I noticed, like, there's a mistake with continuity, and I just knew I wanted to tell a story somehow. I just didn't know where my place would be, so I'm glad that I found it now.
That's great. So what movies have really influenced you? You mentioned Psycho, but is there other movies that have been a big contributor to what you've created and what you've done?
I loved Flubber. I don't know if that's like a thing.
There is no invalid answer here. Every answer is valid.
Oh my gosh. Just like the little crazy special effects back then in the 80s or 90s, whatever. Just Robin Williams too. The way that his charisma and the way that he interacted with something that I knew wasn't there is just, it was great. And also like my favorite movie of all time is Sneakers. So all these Oscar nominated actors and winners, Robert Redford, Sidney Poitier, just seeing them carry each other in the performance. And there's like, you know, there's comedy, of course, but there isn't really like action. Nothing else is just them being them. And you know that they're being characters beside themselves. They're not being like these Oscar winners. It's crazy to see how humble they were. And even hearing them in interviews, like, yeah, Sneakers was the movie for me.
All right. What would you do?
I was a big fan of Del Toro, just monsters and, you know, crazy worlds and cool characters. So every time I watched any of his movies, it really kind of pulled me in and, like, made me appreciate film even more. But I'd say, like, probably Lord of the Rings was what really propelled me and, like, made me appreciate and, you know, look into film. It wasn't necessarily, like, the technical aspects behind it, but sitting in that theater with your neck bent looking at the screen, you know, super high. Something about it just, you know, it kind of engulfs you and just, you know, fascinates you. It's intoxicating. It's really cool.
Well, I really liked Goodfellas. So that was, I really liked Psycho, but I remember being a kid and also watching Goodfellas, catching it on TV when I wasn't supposed to be watching it. And I think I sway more towards the storytelling aspect. So I really like the script and the characters and the dialogue and Goodfellas, so.
All right. And I agree with you, Del Toro. He's a big influence on me as well. I love his work. Mm-hmm. So what was the first film you worked on?
I worked on a 77-hour competition film. And it was funny, like, just the way that they switched roles on me. So I was like, okay, never mind. I'm not going to be assistant to camera. Now I'm just, like, a camera PA. So I'm just going to sit back and listen. And Brandon Adams, who was the DP, he was really great. He gave me so much insight. He told me to hold all the flash drives, and I just listened to everything he told me to do. So, yeah, it was pretty interesting. It was a lot of interesting characters on that set. It was kind of chaotic, but I think that's basically how it goes when you're starting out. And it was really good to see, I mean, just them grow and see us grow. Very, very, very interesting.
Mine was Vampire Academy, which is the thing that Blair helped produce and everything. That was a really great opportunity for me to network. I met almost all of my film friends that I have now on that set, and I learned so much. I worked as sound. I helped with a little bit of the camera stuff, camera team. Like, it was just, I got to do a lot, and I met a lot of great people.
And my first film experience was on a music video here at school. Charm You Yet, I think it was the name of it. It was pretty interesting. I was a PA and really had no idea what was going on, but I just stood there, asked questions, worked when I was supposed to, you know, didn't pull up my phone and text, and that was, like, you know, the big thing for me. And then after that, I kind of helped out on, like, small promotional stuff, so.
All right. So what would you say would be your favorite moment on a film? What is that aha moment where you sit there and go, yes, this is why I love doing this?
For me, it's, you know, those long days. There's nothing like being on a film set for 12 or 14 hours and just dragging through it, you know, with every single person that's there. You know, at that point, even if you don't really know the person, you're a family, you know. You're going through the motions, you're experiencing the turmoil that is happening on set, and all the good things, too. So, I think that's probably my favorite, you know, being on that film set.
My aha moment while watching a film was definitely at the end of Psycho, when, you know, the plot twist. I remember sitting in the theater, because I saw it for the first time in theater. They were doing, like, the replays of the oldies. And I was like, this is why I love storytelling, because I just did not see it coming. I was probably one of the few people that did not see it coming, and I just felt just, like, this warm, fuzzy feeling inside.
What would you say your favorite moment is on set, though?
On set?
Yes.
Probably seeing connections that people make. I like building the teams. That's why I like to do producing. So if I, you know, put together this team and then they end up working really well together, I kind of, like, scream a little bit, because I'm like, I did that. I knew you guys would work well together. It's like a movie set matchmaker or something.
What about you, Ethel?
Yeah, my biggest aha moment would be, and I was kind of thrown into producing on somebody's assignment, directing two class, and I didn't show up on the first day, and I heard that everything went well except, like, an actor was probably coked out or something, and that was interesting. I was like, okay, well, we're gonna have to deal with that, or we don't have to deal with that, because the second day he wasn't there. But I was on the second day, and I realized that the hero prop, which was a guitar, was supposed to be, like, on the set in, like, a couple minutes, and I immediately, as a producer, had to go and get one of my PAs to drive with me to go to the person that was supposed to be on the set who didn't show up with the guitar and get it from him, and even had to pay him. It was ridiculous. Like, honestly, my director didn't even realize what happened. He was just, like, wondering, like, where are you guys? And I would just, you know, just calmly lie. It's like, we're just going to get some coffee real quick. We'll be right back. And we're going to get that guitar, too, so no worries. So the fact that he didn't have to think about it, and I had to think about it, troubleshoot really quick, that was my biggest moment. Like, I need to do this. I need to find solutions for these people so they can do their creative stuff, because I now know that I am no longer in the creative. I don't need to be in that section. So, yeah.
And what kind of stories do you guys like to tell?
For me, I was always into comedy. It's very hard to write or to read a script that's comedic and to actually be okay with it. Like, okay, I can produce this. So now I'm more open to any kind of genre. It's very interesting. This is my first dark comedy that I'll be working on as my final assignment. But I've worked on horror, and I've worked on, I think it was an action one too. It's a drama as well. I forgot. But yeah, so comedy's like it's pretty tough to write comedy. So to actually read it and then see it on the screen, sometimes it's different. It's just the actors basically doing their thing and making it different.
You gotta be very charismatic to make it work.
Yeah.
I would say dark dramas, dramas in general, are my favorite. I really enjoy anything that, you know, kind of pushes the boundaries of your mind. So sometimes experimental if I can. But for the most part, just dark drama or drama. So.
All right.
I like dark comedies. I like to write them and produce them. I love everything about them. Dark comedies for the win.
So across the board, some kind of edgy sense to a film. Yeah, that's what I'm getting here.
We're a bunch of angsty teens at heart.
And you guys all have positions on a film. We're going to go ahead and kind of mix some of these questions up. You guys want to talk about the piece and what you're doing on it and what's been the process for that for the listeners?
Sure. Yes, I'm producing, and what can I say? Every day is another thing. You always have to make sure you're on top of everybody and also on top of everything. So I knew from the beginning that I could not do this by myself. And I just added another co-producer. Madeline Pearson is also co-producing with us. But Katie here, she's been a godsend. She always makes sure that these guys communicate within their own department. And I basically, it's just one less stress for me. So I'm really happy that I have her. But yeah, producing is what I want to do. And I'm really excited about just seeing them do their thing on set. It's going to be great.
Yep. This is actually the first dark comedy. Is this the first dark comedy you've produced? Because this is the first one. Yes. And I'm so excited about actually being able to do a dark comedy. So, yeah, but I'm helping co-produce, so type a lot of emails, do a lot of communicating.
Yeah, the as director of photography, the process, you know, is constantly changing as, you know, pre-production all goes along. But currently, you know, I'm working on helping build that world with the storyboards and creating my shot list and everything. The cool part that I've seen is, you know, the fact that you do see that world unfold. You do see the story unfold as you build the storyboard. So it helps you gain that nice visual sense and really rounds the story off for you. So that's currently what I'm doing.
And do you want to give a little short synopsis of what the film's actually about? Just for the listeners so they have an idea.
You go ahead, Katie. You're so much more well-spoken than I am.
That's not true. I think we all know Tyler's more well-spoken than all of us. Yeah. He's kicked our butts at this. Come on, Tyler.
Well, just like this awkwardness, right? The story follows two best friends, and one of them is an artist. He decides to tag his whole graffiti up on the wall for everybody to enjoy. And, you know, he's very hopeful. He wants to be loved, basically, or appreciated for his work. And his best friend, Clint, is just not having any of it. He knows that this guy sucks. He's not a great artist, which is true. And so the artist goes off and buys some supplies, and he just goes away from this world, right? And we have Clint, who stays behind. And then all of a sudden, these group of thugs come in. And they think that he's the artist, has destroyed basically everything and has like an ulterior motive. He's got another gang started up. So now they create like this whole misunderstanding and this war begins. And now how is Clint going to get the hell out of this?
We don't want to give away the ending. Of course. You'll have to tune in.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
So two more real questions and then we'll get into where you do some shout outs and stuff. So what would you say is your favorite film you've ever worked on or worked with? As I see them all kind of think for a second.
I would say my favorite film-related project would be a music video I did called For Don Bracco, Come Out to L.A. was the title.
Seen that one. It's very, very good.
Yeah, it was a great experience. I mean, long hours. I think we worked maybe 60 or 65 hours in 3 days. But we had a really, really talented team that was there. And we really owned that video just as a team. I felt like the director and the DP had their vision, and we executed as best we could for them. And I think it's a project that, you know, people can be proud of, and the artists can be proud of too. So
I secretly had that song stuck in my head for like 3 days at work.
Yeah, it's so catchy. Man. Everything about it's super catchy.
Just say it, just shake. Stay in Hollywood.
Stay in Hollywood. No, stay in Hollywood.
Was that your favorite one too, Katie?
That was my favorite one too, actually. I was like, dang it, he took my answer. Oh. I dug two holes for that.
Grapes.
You did? You dug very nice graves.
I dug very nice graves for that. I got shards of glass stuck in my arms from working with the art department, and it was worth every cut. It was awesome.
Oh my.
That was amazing. So much fun. Everybody communicated so well. It was great.
Yeah, I'm going to just go out and, like, bow out now. Every single one has been interesting to me in every sense of that
word. In a different way, yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good point because you learn so much on each film set you go on.
And sometimes I'm not on set, so that's the thing, too. That's the thing, like Gary Turner Ivy would say. If he's listening, hi, Gary.
He's probably not.
Gary is. It's fine.
But yeah,
he's my goat man, but...
Yeah, going on what Ethel said, you just keep that positive mindset for each set you go on to. Hmm. You know, you pick and choose what you'll take away from it, but, you know, you just have to see what you can find positive from it, so...
Okay. So I'm going to throw a question that's on the list out here, and then we'll do a end question, and you can just shout. So... Okay. For people that are aspiring to be filmmakers, people that are outside the industry, people that they see this and they're like, that's what I want to do when they grow up, you know, these young high schoolers, stuff like that, is there something you would want to tell them, tips you could give them, or something that you could say that would give them a little insight of what it's actually like to be in this industry?
Wow. Well, I come from the acting background, so I guess what I would tell students is whatever passion you have for film, even if you like it, just get thrown into it. Go on the set. Be a production assistant. Do anything that they tell you to do. You will eventually, as sets go on and you're on them, you'll eventually find where you click and where your interests
niche.
Are. Yeah. Yeah.
My advice would be work hard. I mean, the long days are normal in film. And don't sit down because you will look bad. Work hard. Stay away from the crafty table unless you need it.
Unless you work it.
And if you really want it will come to you. Just keep working for it, because people will try to tell you it's not happening for you, but it will. If you want something bad enough, keep at it and you will get there.
And when you work hard and you push yourself, you know, if you're not pushing yourself and continuing to work hard, you're not going to make it. Mm-hmm. You have to set yourself up with those skills, that mindset, to go into the industry and do a good job. And, you know, the biggest thing is when you're on set, when you're working on set, going back to what Katie said, don't stand there. Ask questions, constantly hover without getting in the way, you know.
Observe.
Be mindful of what's going on around you. Because, you know, we're always learning stuff in life. And, you know, those lessons that we get taught and the things that we apply to it, we have to pick up somehow. So, you know, you have to be aware. You have to observe.
Don't be afraid to mess up.
Yeah, don't be afraid to mess up. Ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions when you don't know something.
All right, as we do with every one of these interviews, we have a special in question that is unique to each, well, person or group in this chance. This one will have two because we have a DP and producers. So for the producers, you can answer this together or separately, however you choose. Would you rather have an unlimited budget but be stuck with amateur actors, or the perfect cast in a small budget?
See, I'm over analytical, so what do you mean by amateur cast? Are they bad? Because I know a lot of...
Not bad, but like have no formal training. Or you can go for like your George Clooney's and stuff like that, but have like a super small budget. So big budget, but have to have small actors, or big actors and very small budget.
I would go with small actors, big budget.
Well, you have the same
thing. That's a great question. That's a two thumbs up for me. Yeah, if you have to deal with professional actors and a small budget, good luck. They're either going to be divas, or you really are going to have to provide just to feed them, and that's near impossible. You can't do that.
I know.
It'll come out of your own pocket. So
many amateur actors that have really great potential. Yeah.
But
you
also
can buy them a class with your unlimited budget.
Yeah. Also, in that sense, I think Tyler can agree with me. The bigger budget you have, you can put into, you know, the tools. And if you have a great DP and a great director, they're going to be able to make those shots where maybe put more inserts of objects instead of, you know, putting the actor on there all the time. Or, you know, if one of them can at least just react, then we can cut to that, you know. So, yeah, unlimited budget for sure. The actors you can work around. Always.
Lots of great actors haven't made it yet. We can get our hands on some of them.
And there's a lot of great actors that have made it and they're not good. So
true.
There you go.
For the DP, if you could have a dream camera, what would it be? And if the camera doesn't exist yet, what would you want features for it?
Right now, I've really been looking at the Arri Alexa. You know, I would love to have that. And I just look at the price, and I'm like, okay, maybe one day. Honestly, though, you know, as far as cameras go, I feel like each camera has something to offer. You kind of have to figure out the limitations for it and, you know, see how you can push that camera to its best ability. So,
okay. So this is the part where you guys do shout outs, talk about anything you want. If there's any social medias you want to plug or any events or the film, if you want to talk more about the piece, you're welcome to. This is your time to shine in this area.
You want to talk about social media? Yeah, Katie, go ahead.
Follow us on Facebook, The Piece.
Or Instagram.
Or Instagram, at The Piece.
We also have a GoFundMe if anybody would like to donate to that. It's GoFundMe.com/the-piece.
And it's, you know, don't feel obligated, but any little bit helps, and it's your way of being a part of building student films. It's incredible. It's an incredible process, and it's an incredible thing to be a part of. So,
you know, we have a dream. You know, a lot of people wake up each day with dreams, and you know, fortunately, we're able to, you know, have the resources for what we have and try to accomplish it. But, you know, like Katie said, it does take money to feed people and, you know, acquire certain things to make it happen. So,
do you guys want to plug your own personal like Twitters or anything like that, so they can get a hold of you guys if they have questions or want to reach out to you?
I'm usually more active on Facebook than anything else because I'm about 45 at heart. So, my Facebook name is KATEY MAUGHON. So if you need to message me or, you know, just want to say what's up or if you're feeling down, just talk to me. I'll talk to you.
And, you can also, you know, add me on Facebook if you want. Tyler, TYLERE and Brown, BROWN.
All right. I have a Facebook. My name is Ethel Nunez Suazo. Y'all can look that up however you want to.
Don't talk to Ethel. Yeah, she's...
I don't have time.
I'm just kidding.
I will have time, I promise. No, yes, I'll give you advice if you want it, but I feel like, you know, you'll do fine on your own, I promise. I do want to thank, like, lastly, you know, as a main idea here, I went to Georgia State for film, and I realized that they were putting a lot of their money into research and just giving us a textbook and read this, and you're not going to be on a set with your fellow students because why would you do that? Like, what? And you can't touch the cameras. Like, they're there, they cost 50 grand, like, you can't touch those things. So, okay. So, you know, I decided I'm going to have to just choose a cheaper option, and University of Georgia, North Georgia was there. I'm sorry, not UGA. UNG was there. And yeah, I think I made the right decision, but also I believe that everything happens for a reason, and I met these incredible people, which I hope that in the future we definitely get to work on things past school. So I really want to thank UNG for doing that, and Dr. Jeff Marker for sure for hooking us up. Thank you.
Yeah, we have an incredible film program here, and it's something I always brag about when people are like, well, I got accepted into, you know, this really expensive... I wasn't going to say the name, but I got accepted into this really expensive... Yeah. But, you know, yeah, that stuff helps. It helps to have 20 reds available to you, but I think what we have here at UNG is something way more special. We have this incredible team of people that will work together to accomplish so many goals. We have a great ensemble here, and it's something that I'm so happy that I didn't go to SCAD.
It's very organic.
Yeah.
It is organic,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we're going to end this off. This has been Jordan.
Katie.
Ethel.
Tyler.
And if you like this interview or any of the other interviews, leave us a like and comment on wherever you're listening to us, be it iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or YouTube. And as always, we're going to be continuing on next week when you guys listen to us, talking to a creator of some form, be it a writer, director, cinematographer, producer, actor, whatever they may be, as long as they're making content that's happy with me. So this is the end of it, and we'll see you next week.